Listen to Shoot the Defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX. Happy Easter, everyone. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got three co-hosts tonight. I've got Mr. Yanakis back from his sabbatical. How you doing?
Not bad. You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. Your beard has grown.
I know. It's good to be back, though.
Is it for Easter?
It's for Easter. Yeah, it looks all right. It was going
Greek,
way,
Greek Easter's next week, so you can actually shave afterwards, can't you?
I could look like one of the priests, don't I?
Well, yeah, but then you'd have to be a hypocrite, and then you don't want to do that.
Moving on.
We can say that about Greek priests. We don't have any Greek priests listening anyway. My second co-host is none other than Rodri Giggs. Rod, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah. I'm just recovering like Sad from the Easter weekend. But I'm all good.
So have you had anyone complaining to you about your April Fool's Day jokes? Let me tell you what this guy did, right? I went to work that morning and I went to the gym and I finished from the gym. Now, the gym that I go to in Hammersmith doesn't have any reception downstairs. So when I left the gym, my phone was popping and people, you know, Twitter alerts and whatnot. And then this guy sends me a text message. Mm. Now, bearing in mind, I didn't realize it was April the 1st. I completely lost track of time of the dates. And I get a text saying, "Pow, I've just received an email from MUTV. They'd like me to go on to film some episodes." I was just wicked. Like, they must be watching this, or they must have seen our LinkedIn, because obviously we've got connections at MUTV for our LinkedIn. And you know, I put obviously posts, and Rod likes them and shares them, whatever. And then he sends me a meme of a guy with a fish. He goes, "You've been got or something." And he goes, "It's April Fool's Day." I was like, "You punk. You punk." I'm like, "How old are you, man? You're pulling April Fool's Day jokes on
it." It worked, though, didn't it?
It did. But he got loads of people. Who else did you get, Rod?
I got my sister, semi-girlfriend's pregnant with twins.
See, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of ironic. It's kind of ironic that his name is Rodri, because he is like got his fishing rod, hasn't he? Yeah, sorry, you were saying, young man. What are you saying?
No, nothing. No, it's fun. It was a good day.
Good, good. And was your birthday even better?
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, that was all right. It was too, yeah.
Do you share the same birthday as Andrew Wyman?
I do, yeah. I didn't realise that till yesterday, but yeah.
There you go. Wonderful. Happy days. My third co-host is Saji Burton. Saj, welcome back to the show, mate. Long time.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me back. Really enjoyed the first time on about a month ago. I'm really pleased to be back. Thank you.
Hey, pleasure. Pleasure's ours, mate. Pleasure's ours. How was your Easter?
Yeah, it's good. Just spending with the little one, travelling around the southeast, doing new things for her. Aquarium, Leeds Castle, swimming, stuff like that. So yeah, it was really good, but very tiring. Filling it now.
Can imagine. And any April Fool's Day jokes pulled on you, mate?
No, not really. No, I kind of just switch off totally. My phone was off most of the time when I was at home.
Fair enough.
So,
fair enough. So yeah. You didn't get roped in like I did. Yeah.
No, I didn't get roped in. Not at all. No.
Well, listen, I can't get Rod back. I haven't got any excuses to get him back. But don't worry, I will. I'll find a way.
I'm surprised you've gone public.
Well, listen,
knowing you.
I shall bide my time. Yes, patience is a virtue, as they say. You who last longest. Yeah, listen, gone public with it. Listen, it's not as if, you know, it's a big deal. Okay, I always had, right? But it was exciting. It was a great story to have, you know? Can you imagine Rod on MUTV?
I could see him on MUTV.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
You tell it like it is. It might upset people like Gary Pallister and all that, but, you know, let's not go into that.
Robson.
Oh, you dumb upset. Robbo, come on.
Yeah.
Robbo's hard. Right, let's talk about the Premier League and some of the games that have occurred tonight in the Champions League. Our top stories. Man City are one win away from winning the title. Spurs ended their 28-year Stamford Bridge jinx. Groundhog Day for Crystal Palace. Arnautovic strikes twice. Arsenal player lets teammate takes penalty. Pardew leaves after 4 months in charge of West Brom. And I can't not talk about Cristiano Ronaldo's overhead kick tonight. Jesus Christ. Like, I know there's going to be a lot of talk about it and it's going to be played over and over again. When I saw it, I actually, you know, the way I can describe it is that if I was walking down the street and, I don't know, J-Lo was walking across the road naked, that deep breath that you're going to take or shot, that's exactly what I did when Ronaldo scored. And Zidane's reaction was exactly what I did. It was absolutely batshit crazy. You didn't see the goal, but you saw it when you...
I did, when I came here. What a goal. It reminded me of Crouch's against Galatasaray.
Saj, Just stop. Saj, I'm going to cut this guy off because he's comparing Ronaldo to Peter Crouch. Stop it. Saj, tell me about this goal. Shut up. As an ex-pro...
Unfortunately, when I came in, I just missed it. Went up to see my little one. I came down and it was all raving about it, and it just showed him sliding away, or, you know. So... yeah, unfortunately, I missed it, but they just kept on talking about it for the next 20 minutes, and I was just waiting for the repeat, but unfortunately, missed it. But Real Madrid are dominant. They could have won 4 or 5 easily tonight.
They put them to bed. They put them to sleep. They tucked them in bed. They gave them their little blanket. They gave them their cuddly bear, and they said, here you go, Juve. We've dealt with you already. We dealt with you in the final last season. We dealt with you already. You know, Buffon, your career's done, mate. Finished. Like, greatest respect, you're done.
Ronaldo ended it.
Crikey. This is the thing, right? Rod, before I talk to you, before I ask you about the goal, mate, we were discussing it beforehand, and Juventus are by far the best team in Serie A at the moment. You know, Napoli are on the coattails, but, you know, Napoli drop points, Juventus bounce back, they get a good win against Milan, which we're going to talk about later on in the show. And they come across Real Madrid, who are the third best team in Spain. But, and I say this like as if Real Madrid are nothing. They've won 3 Champions Leagues out of the last 4. They're no mugs. They own this trophy. And tonight, they dealt with them. As I said, they tucked them in and said, here you go, here's your bottle.
Yeah, that's phenomenal performance. And to think Real Madrid are so many points behind Barcelona in La Liga, it's crazy. It's crazy to think that with performances like that and the way that they played. It was the football as well. It was exciting. It was attacking. And Juventus are renowned for a team that do not concede goals, as you know, and it could have been a cricket score tonight. I mean, at the end, I catch the last 10, 15 minutes, like I said, when we watched it together. Ronaldo could have had another 3. It was that dominant, and it's scary. I know Dybala got sent off as well for Juve, but it didn't matter. Real Madrid were going to win regardless.
Dybala. Rod, what do you make of Ronaldo and his performance tonight? I'm not going to ask you if he's the best in the world because it's unfair. Is he the best in the world?
Oh, it's difficult. It goes from one to the other, doesn't it? But you can't argue with Messi being the best. But then you can't argue Ronaldo being the best at the minute with goals like that. You know, they're just both. Well, you just got to be blessed that you're around and they're playing in your lifetimes. They're just world class players and. They just seem to amaze you year after year after year, and it just keeps on going on and on, and it's just great to watch.
No, I agree. Look, we're going to be talking about this goal for a very, very, very long time, probably till tomorrow when Messi repeats something that we kind of expect Messi to do. I mean, you're spot on. These are two of the best players of our generation. There will always be comparisons between, you know, R9 and Zidane and Figo and Cruyff and Pele whichever players they can dig up from the 20s and the 30s. But, you know, tonight was a statement of intent by Real Madrid. You know, they're obviously the La Liga title is beyond their reach. They know they can win the Champions League again this season. And I just wouldn't put it past them, regardless of their form. I just would not put it past them. You know, they're going to get through, obviously. Whoever they face in the next round, it's going to be a very, very intriguing game. But the other game, Bayern Munich.
Beat Seville 2-1.
2-1, yeah. Not a great game. We were flicking over the channels and nothing really to harp on about. But Sevilla just proved how difficult they are to break down.
Yep. Good result from Bayern Munich to go away from home, regardless who you're playing, to get 2 away goals and to win the game. Driving seat, 1 foot in the semis.
Absolutely. There you go. That was our Champions League roundup. See? Who says we can't do easy? Nice one, nice one. Right, let's talk about the Premier League. And Man City blitzed Everton in the first 12 minutes, going 2-0 up and were out of sight 7 minutes before half time when Sterling made it 3-0. Saj, it just shows how dominant Man City were when Fernandinho played 62 passes while Everton managed 64 in total, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Man City have done fantastic this season. They've just blown away kind of every team going. It's all credit to the manager, Guardiola, for getting them that fit and that skilled to be able to play at that high tempo, you know, score so many goals and, you know, be fantastic on the break. Because, like, two of the three goals that they scored were that came from inside their half and, you know, they kind of ran it kind of 75% or 70 metres up the pitch to score goals. And, I mean, it's a fantastic feat for them to keep on scoring goals like that. You have to be tremendously fit to play that type of football and do it week in, week out in the Premier League. It's just a credit to them.
Absolutely. And Rod Guardiola said, you have to be aggressive and keep the ball at Goodison Park and Anfield. And his side did just that on Saturday, mate. What has impressed you most about City this season, though?
Just how clinical they've been. And, you know, just the attacking prowess and the way they just blitz teams. They just absolutely killed Everton in that first 45 minutes. They just couldn't touch them. And it's just been a different class this year, and it's just been a joy to watch, really. And it's just a big game now on the weekend. But you know Pep Guardiola's got them going brilliantly.
Saj, let me ask something, mate. What do the rest of the Premier League teams have to do to stand the chance of competing with Man City next season? I know people are going to point to City's bottomless pit of money and say, you know, they bring in anyone they want and now they've got Guardiola, they can strengthen even more. But do City really need to strengthen in the summer? Can you see them improving their squad, if that's even possible?
Well, it's always possible to improve your squad. I mean, if you look at Ferguson at Man United, they'd always keep people on their toes and keep selling kind of fringe-ish players and keep bringing new players in to keep them on their toes. Otherwise, it just goes stale. I mean, prime example of that is Arsenal. With my team, I mean, we've been stale for about 10 years. But it just doesn't get rid of the dead wood. Just keep the same players around all the time. So, I mean, if you just get rid of the fringe players, then he just keeps people on their toes. For example, this season, he got, not saying Joe Hart, dead wood. I mean, he's England goalkeeper, but he got rid of him, season and a half ago, just told him, like, you're not going to be playing. So just keeping, you know, if you can get rid of your England international, keeps everyone on their toes so you can't mess around.
Yeah, true. I mean, to be fair, out of that squad, if we're talking about this season, people that have played, let's say, 10, 15 games or more, the only one I can realistically see possibly going is Fabian Delph. But then what does that do to City's British-based quota, do you know what I mean? So I'm not saying they're keeping him just for that, but at the same time, I'm sure they can bring in someone that's just as versatile, if not more. So if I look at that City team, where can they improve? I don't know. They get goals from all over the pitch. I mean, they can't get rid of Aguero because he's still scoring goals.
He's got one more year in him.
He's got one more year. So. Gabriel Jesus is a fantastic player. And then you look at the midfield, Sané's been outstanding, Sterling's been outstanding. Do they need cover for them? Yeah, exactly. So where can he improve? Even defensively, he brought Laporte.
Maybe the centre-half positions, maybe like a top centre-half, you know. Once Company goes, maybe somebody in that department, I think. Because they've still got Mendy to come
at left back.
Pretty much, Carl Walker and Danilo have got the right side of the defence sorted. I just think maybe the centre-half position. I don't think he trusts Stones as much as people think that he does.
No.
Otamendi's had a good season, but is he a top centre-half? I'm not sure. There's question marks over Otamendi for me. Company, you know, is injury-prone. Laporte is still learning the Premiership. He's a good player, Laporte, though. Mm. So maybe there. That would be probably the only position I could think of that he might look to strengthen.
Fair enough. Okay. I like that one. I like that answer. See, we got right into that one. So the title is done and dusted, as is the race for the remaining three Champions League places, or so it would seem. Now, United's victory in second gear against Swansea and Liverpool's away win at Crystal Palace pretty much means second and third are sorted. So what of the fourth spot? Spurs went to Chelsea looking for a win that would put them 8 points clear of Antonio Conte's men. Now, mate, Spurs took absolute control of the game when they went a goal down and fully deserved their win, but for me, this was actually a very spirited and dogged performance, one that you're not really used to seeing from Spurs. Gone are the Spursy days. This was a fighting win, wasn't it?
It was. It was a bit of a Chelsea night at the races, especially second half, and Tottenham put in a really good performance. I saw no spirit from Chelsea in the second half at all. You know, I'm not going to divert the performance away from Tottenham, but if you look at Chelsea and their manager, Conte's full of enthusiasm. He was full of antics. You don't see that anymore. That's gone. Now, it could be the results. It could be the fact that he doesn't want to be there anymore. Behind the scenes, we don't know. But all that enthusiasm that he brought on to the team with results, it's not there anymore. And you can see that. Whilst Tottenham, they're playing with confidence. They're playing with the belief of the manager that everyone believes his philosophy and the style of football that they play and what Tottenham are hoping to become in the future. And it shows as well continuity of the squad. He's had the same kind of squad for about two, three years now where everybody's kind of gelled and again, gone to his ethos. And, you know, like you said, gone are the days that Tottenham are kind of the bottler, so to speak. And I thought players like Eriksen were outstanding on Sunday. He's such a technically gifted footballer. I think he's very underrated for me, Eriksen. I think he can play in any football team. Right foot, left foot, he's got vision. And they could build a strong team around Eriksen.
Let me ask you one thing then.
Yeah. Right?
If Chelsea were in the same form as they were last season,
yep,
challenging for the title, do Spurs win? And do Spurs win that convincingly?
No. That's why I think it was a bit of both. Because if you watch the first half, Chelsea were arguably the better team in the first half, I thought. For the first maybe 30, 35 minutes until the last 10 where Tottenham got back into the game, I thought there was only kind of one winner. And the second half, like I said, I don't know what happened to Chelsea. It's like, you know, maybe the goal before halftime deflated them, but there was no spirit. You know, the crowd were not there. Maybe it's a team, the fact that they're not going to win nothing this, or possibly the FA Cup because they're still in it, but it's a team that maybe they know they're going to play in the Europa. They don't know if Conte's going to be next season. There's a lot of uncertainty around the club. Maybe that's just reflected onto the players and affected the game. But, you know, you've got to give Tottenham credit as well because, you know, season after season, they're improving and you can see that on the football. For me, they're just as good as, not just as good as City, but they play such attractive and enjoyable football and they play football the right way for me that, you know, they deserve that the results that they get. And, you know, they've got the semi-final. For me, the semi-final is such a big game for Tottenham Football Club because, you know, we play football to win trophies. Mm-hmm. Tottenham, need to start winning trophies now to A, attract better players and keep the players that they've got there. Yeah. So that semi-final for me is a big game for that club.
Mm. I think you are spot on what you said about Eriksen's goal. It was like a body shot that they just didn't recover from.
Sucker punch, I think, just before halftime. Yeah. What a goal it was as well, technically.
The trajectory is
absolutely
immense. Saj, we can't ignore Dele Alli's contribution, mate. The lad was absolutely outstanding. How high do you rate him?
I think he's world class, to be honest.
Yeah?
I think people forget how young he is. And when he came into the Tottenham team, I think he's only like 21, maybe 20. But at that age as well, because he's been on an upwards trajectory, he's been doing really well. Obviously, you're going to have a dip in your form. I think for the last few months, maybe half a season, he's probably had a bit of a dip. Hopefully, he'll be able to pick it back up now for the World Cup for England and get back to what he's been doing. I mean, he's got everything. He can pass the ball. He can run forward. He can tackle. Got a bit of nastiness. He's got a lot. He's got everything that you need to be a world class midfielder.
I agree. And you mentioned about that nastiness. I think David Beckham had that in him as well, as we saw during France '98. And he did leave his foot in a few times as well. So, listen, it's not a bad trait to have. You can control it and not get yourself into trouble.
I don't think he gets himself in trouble too much. I mean, he has done some reckless tackles, but I think he's getting away with it at the moment because he hasn't got a name for being a bad tackler. sometimes that's in the back of the referee's mind, so they kind of, maybe when it is a red card tackle, they give you a yellow card because he's not known for being a kind of a bad tackle or anything like that.
It's got cut out, they're diving them, or the cheating, or tricking, whatever way you want to call it, because he doesn't want to have a reputation of being that.
Well, yeah. I mean, he has got that a little bit at the moment, but if he's doing that for England, I don't mind. he's doing it in the league, that's a bit of a problem.
Fair point. Right, Jamie Redknapp's comments after the game brings us to our bite back section. Now, Mr. Redknapp claims Spurs are on the verge of something great, whatever that means. we asked our listeners if they agree with his comments, and if so, how far can Spurs go? And we've had quite a few comments from our Twitter followers. Mary, a Spurs fan, says the team has evolved and shown it's not first or second. That makes us. We have won games without Kane, Toby, and Son is our unsung hero. We're not perfect. Consistent qualification for the Champions League next season is important. I can see it happening. The new White Hart Lane welcome home gift, but Poch needs to keep the team together by winning the FA Cup, which is exactly what you said. Now, who's our Spurs contributor on your view? It says unbeaten this year, calendar year, obviously. Most points this year. What a recovery after City and Juve games. All about getting through the cup semi-final and try to finish second or third. Got a good chance, I say. Then give Poch what he wants in the summer with signings in the summer and push further next season. Well,
unbeaten in the league stuff? Because they lost to Juve, didn't they?
Unbeaten in 2008, unbeaten in 2018 in the league, I'd say, yeah. I mean, obviously in the cup. Now, Gina, big Spurs fan, says no longer a young team but experience a mentally stronger group. Walker Rose was always our strength, and think no matter how well we play, Trippier and Davis are obviously weaknesses that teams that try to exploit us. A cup though would be a reward for how far we've come and can go under Poch. And Batesy, this guy's absolutely hilarious, but you know, he tells it like it is. He says, vital, the key players are kept together, and of course Pochettino. That first trophy is very important. Three consecutive Champions League qualifications, not to be underestimated amidst the big spends and huge wages players around us. Yeah, that's obviously relating to United, City, Liverpool, and etc. etc. So Spurs fans are very excited, and so they should be. Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at how far they've come over the years. I mean, we were used to seeing, obviously, you know, I remember the early days of the Premier League, even before that, when they had the likes of our friend Paul Stewart, Gary Lineker, where they won the FA Cup and they came third or second in the league, but in 1990, I think it was. But then they kind of went on a downward spiral. They had Ozzy Ardiles and they had Jerry Francis, Christian Gross and his tube ticket.
David Pleat.
Who else did they have? They had some right bizarre...
Martin Yeo,
yeah. But then obviously... Ramos came
Monday
in.
Ramos.
You know, and the signings that they made, Paolo Tramezzani, Ili Dumitrescu, and so on and so forth. You know, get Chris Armstrong, he'd go on forever, but... They brought in Harry Redknapp. He kind of stabilised them, made them a very, very difficult team to beat, and they just kicked on from that. And you know what? For all the criticism Levy gets, I think he's done an absolutely outstanding job. You know, he's got rid of, like, your Berbatovs, your Bales, and they've built on it. It's not as if they've done what United did when they sold Ronaldo and just, like, sat on their money and said, right,
you know. Michael Owen on a free.
Yeah, and Obertan. Anyway. Yeah. They invested wisely. They trusted in their scouting system. They trusted in their youth academy. And here we have a team that they're not a million miles away from competing. They're not a million miles away from winning a trophy. But it goes back to the old adage, do they need to win a trophy to be taken serious? I mean, how far do you think they can go?
In what sense? As in league?
In any sense at all, my friend. In any sense at all.
It depends on if the manager stays. And if they can build on what they've got, you need players like, it comes to a point where players like Kane, Eriksen, Vertonghen, these players thinking, well, yeah, we play good football and we run after this, but I want to win trophies, and they might look away. And the stadium as well, will they have the resources to bring in the players once the new stadium's there?
I think they will.
If they do, then they can keep what they've got, then of course they can compete. And like you said, if you're a Tottenham fan, it's exciting times because they're building something there. But it's not only crucial for the players, it's also crucial for the manager, for his reputation. Because we all know that Pochettino's never won. Okay, he's never had the most attractive clubs that his manager, Spaniel and
Southampton.
Southampton. So the likelihood of him winning something is not very likely. But
well, hang about, Martinez won the FA Cup with Wigan.
He did, but that's
a... Harry Redknapp won the FA Cup with Portsmouth.
It can happen. I'm not saying he can't, but the likelihood is it's not going to happen. So for his reputation...
Michael Laudrup won the League Cup with Swansea.
It can happen. I know what you're saying, and I agree, but... You know, 9 out of 10
Bobby
times.
Gould won the FA Cup with Wimbledon. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm being facetious.
Yeah, I know. I get it. But, you know, for Pochettino's reputation as well, he needs to win something as well.
Absolutely. Rodri, I know that you kind of like Spurs. I'm not saying that you're a massive fan of theirs, but you rate them. Jan mentioned a very good point earlier about them moving to a new stadium next season. Will that hinder them? My argument is... there's much more money involved in the game than what it was when, say, Arsenal moved from Highbury to the Emirates, where, you know, Gazidis and Wenger were blaming the finances and paying back the stadium and whatnot for their failings. I can't see Spurs doing the same. I can't see Spurs not spending money in the summer. How far do you think they can go with this squad and with Pochettino, mate?
Yeah, they've been together a long time now, and they are a decent side, but like the lad said, they need to win a trophy now. And you know, will it hinder them going to this ground? It shouldn't do. They have their own ground. It's relatively right next to their old ground, so it's not changed in how you get there or your preparation or traveling a different. It's more or less traveling to the same place. So they've got to keep. They missed out big time when the year Leicester won it. If they would have won it there, they may have kicked on. The players would have got an extra boost, an extra confidence. They've missed out there, but you know they've got three massive problems, and that's Liverpool, Man United, and Man City. Are they better sides than them at the minute? Well, the league tells us no. So, but they have. Listen, when you've got a player like Harry Kane, you've got every chance in the world you can win Premier League. But it's keeping them all them players together. And adding a little bit more.
No, that's right. That's right. Now, the thing is, Saj, I'm going to ask you this one, mate, because with the World Cup obviously around the corner, a lot of Spurs players are going to be in those World Cup squads. We're going to see Dembele, we're going to see Eriksen, we're going to see loads of Spurs players are going to be in World Cup squads. Now, if they don't win the FA Cup, even if they do actually, is this World Cup going to really hurt Spurs? Because as you know, we've seen the likes of, you know, Barcelona bringing in Coutinho, but they're going to want to spend in the summer. Real Madrid, they're going to want to strengthen, so on and so forth. So with Spurs having a fantastic season, as they have a fantastic three seasons, the World Cup is there for them to showcase their talents at international level. It puts them in the shop window. Are we going to see 3, 4, even 5 Spurs players leaving, or are they going to just keep the same core players and strengthening in other areas?
Well, if you look at Spurs over the past years, I think they've got rid of like one big name player per year or whatever. I think they've got about a year and a half max or a season and a half max together to kind of win something big before players start getting not fed up but will decide to leave. I think the one problem that Tottenham have is the wages that they pay because they cap it at certain. Repeatedly at about 150,000 or 120,000. When you think about it, if Harry Kane's on 120,000, you've got Benteke at Palace on 120,000. Do you know what I mean? I mean, look at the difference between those two. I mean, and you know, you've got players at Arsenal and Man City and Man United from a range between 300 and half a million a week. I mean, that's obviously going to turn people's heads wages. So I think if they don't up the wages as well, I think players will decide to leave. There's only a certain amount of time before players, you know, you'll stay with a team for loyalty, but at the end of the day, it's about how much money you make. I mean, I know 120 grand a week, you live off that for life forever after you've retired, but everyone wants to make as much money as possible, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
I think, in my opinion, it doesn't matter if they win it or not this season. The squad will stick for one more year because of the stadium. I think a lot of the players will want to play in that stadium.
Kind of like with Atletico Madrid.
Yep. And then whatever happens next season, maybe players will start leaving then if nothing develops at Tottenham.
Well, it makes more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Daniel Levy is a astute businessman as well. So if any of them do leave, it'll be for a massive amount or overpriced and he'll get a good price. But, you know, if I know how Daniel Levy works, he won't let these players leave if he don't want them to leave.
The thing is, they're good players as well, Rod. If someone like, I don't know, Alderweireld, left. What are we talking about? 50, 60 million?
We're already making noises. I think Alder Weireld for 50 million will be a snip.
I'll take him at United all day.
Be a snip.
Yeah, but like Sadji says, you either let him go or you give them the contract that they deserve, because Harry Kane shouldn't be on 120 grand a week when Ben Tech is 120 grand. That's a joke.
He's right. Simple as that.
There you go. Right. Speaking of Benteke, Liverpool's late win at Selhurst Park left Roy Hodgson comparing his side's fortunes to Groundhog Day, given the nature of the defeat. That's sad. Palace, your old club, you've obviously got an affiliation for him. When you think back to that penalty miss against Burnley and Man City, those two, well, I think it was Benteke and then Milojevic, and then they lost against United and Liverpool after being ahead. You can't actually say they've been unlucky, can you? They've been a victim of their own demise, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. There's no such thing as unlucky, in my opinion. You make your own luck, don't you? But, yeah, I mean, they're just missing something at the moment. But with the squad they've got and with the injuries and stuff like that, and with everyone coming back together, I'm pretty confident that they'll be all right. I mean, I don't think they've got too many hard games left to kind of got the teams around them, and they seem to be beating them quite convincingly. For example, when they beat Huddersfield a couple of weeks ago, it was very convincing. So, you know, it's just trying to move Palace onto the next stage, but they need to do it kind of very slowly. It's not like they're Man City where they can just buy a whole new squad and a whole new players. They just need to keep kind of the core very, very top players that they've got in their squad, kind of build on that each year, which they have been doing.
Yeah, I mean, when De Boer came in, his philosophy was clearly flawed, to say the least.
Well, I heard something, someone told me that basically after about 3 days that they were unconvinced. They knew that they chose the wrong man. But
wow. That is saying something.
That is saying something, but can't hire someone after 3 days and then sack them, because then people question your ability. So you have to let them hang themselves and then make sure you've got someone else in the lined up to come forward.
The thing is, in De Boer's defence, I know Mourinho's actually torn him a new one, but in his defence, was he given the financial backing in the summer to bring in the players that he wanted? I know he brought in that fullback from Ajax.
I think they gave him recommendations of players to buy and players to keep and stuff like that. And
yeah, but I could recommend wallpaper, mate. Mm.
Yeah, but if you're non-committal, because his squad wasn't big enough in first place, I don't think. So they gave him recommendations to keep players and maybe get some players in, and he's like, no. But I think by the time he said yes, it was probably too late, and then they're probably going to be overpriced or whatever.
Thing is, Phil, if what Sasha says is true about the 3 days they were unconvinced about him, they're not going to give him the money to spend, are they? If they don't trust him.
Yeah, but he can only work with what he's got.
Yeah, but if they, after 3 days, have looked and gone, oh my God, we've made the mistake not going to give him the money to back him to send him forward.
Who do you think didn't think that he was up for it? Was it Steve Parrish? Or was it, I don't know, the players? I don't know. You're looking at a guy that... Let's play the hot and cold game.
Those rumours have been like kind of taking free kicks, banging them in the stanchion, and like, go on, go and do that. And then like, how can I follow that? And I think he's got one of those problems what top players have as managers, that they think everyone can do what they did as a player.
Glenn Hoddle.
Exactly. Well, I think Glenn Hoddle's a good coach.
Yeah, but
I don't think he knew how to coach the players.
Well, there you go.
Or speak to players in a proper manner, because I think the Dutch players are quite straightforward. The Dutch players I played with are quite kind of abrupt and, you know, can kind of rub you up the wrong way as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, from what I've been told, a lot of the Dutch players are taught, like, how can I put it? They're encouraged to ask questions and from a very young age. So we're talking like junior level. So if a kid is taught, I don't know, to play a certain way, and he'll ask questions, he's encouraged to ask, like, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to take a touch? Why do I have to pass it instantaneously? Why? And I think that's just in their nature and in their makeup.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If what you're saying is, you know, he's putting balls in top bin.
Can I add something about
Palace? How can you not admire that? I mean, it's just brilliant. Go on, carry on.
You can admire it, but when he says, like, go on, you guys do that, oh, why can't you do that? It's like, well, you know, I haven't got two Champions League medals and a flipping European Cup.
Yeah, but Ben Tekka's 120 bags a week. He should be able to do that. Come on.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's stuff I've heard on the grapevine. I don't know whether it's true or not, but, you know.
Okay, we'll take your word for it. What are you going to say, mate?
I was going to say, for the start that they've had, the fact I think they went no win in seven nine games. Yeah, without a goal.
Seven games without a goal and a win.
The one of the smallest squads in the Premiership. They've had one recognised striker all season who doesn't score any goals, and that's their striker. To be where they are is a credit to them somehow.
It's a credit to Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, it is. You think about it. It is, isn't it, Saj? Logically, if you think about it. From where they started.
But then you look at Roy Hodgson, he's basically had the same squad and he's got them to where they are. Yeah. So obviously he must have been doing something wrong.
How many goals has Benteke scored this season? I'd be intrigued. Six, seven? Is that a lot? Would that be wrong?
I don't know. I think it's...
Has he got more than that? I'd be surprised.
I don't ask me.
But that's what I mean. If he's their main man who's played up front all season when he's been fit. Because that's the only one that they had. And they tried Sako up front until he got injured. And he scored a few when he went up front, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the limited resources that they had, a small squad, and to still be fighting and to be there, like you said, it's a credit to kind of Roy Hodgson for what he's done there.
True. Well, according to Wankipedia, he's got 17 goals in 62 games for Palace since 2016. So it's not exactly a prolific record, is it? Let's be honest. But yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, but the thing is, we've got to bear in mind that people like Zaha have been chipping in with goals, Milojevic, Kabay,
Townsend.
And this is what you need from a team if you want to stay up. You can't rely on one or two players to get goals. They're getting goals from all over the pitch. Tompkins, Dan when he was playing, Evan Arnholt. He's been doing well. Good player. He's taking up a Luke Shaw at the moment. Yeah.
Take anyone.
Rod, a little bit of controversy, mate. Sadio Mane, he was booked for diving. He then was about to get a second yellow for deliberate handball, but then Nigel Swarbrick reached for the card, changed his mind, and it fueled more accusations of favouritism. What do you make of this, and are you actually surprised that there are no English referees came to the World Cup?
I'm surprised that there's no English referees got to work up now because they're all poor. And that shows with that decision. They're so, you know, there's no consistency in them. Like, half the referees would have sent him off and half the referees... It's just the non-consistency for me. And it just goes on every year, you would have thought they would have got better with him being professionals, but... To be honest, it's just got worse. They're becoming arrogant. You can't talk to them. You know, there's some that you just can't stand anymore just because of their arrogance of them. You know, they're there to referee. They're not there to look good or to, you know, look at me. It's to do a job. But you know, these referees, they absolutely do your head in these days. And most, they're not getting any better either. They're getting younger, but they're not getting any better, which is a shame.
Clattenburg and Howard Webb got a lot of stick, but they were actually decent referees, in my opinion. I don't think they were that bad. These lot now, I agree with Rod, they're one of the worst referees the Premiership has seen. I think they're so bad, it's unreal.
Keystone Cops, isn't it?
Yeah, what Rod's saying is true, you know, the consistency. How can somebody just pick the ball up and not book him? I don't get it. And the funny thing is, there were two Palace players around Mane. If they got the ball, 2-1... 2v1 situation against the centre half to go 1-1 with the goalkeeper. So, in a way, it stopped the goal scoring opportunity, didn't it? So that's a book in itself without him picking the ball up. So, how can you not? I don't get it. I really don't. And like Rod said, they're professionals now as well. That's appalling.
He's basically bottled at the referee because he's gone to give him a yellow card, realised he's already given him a yellow card, and stopped.
Yeah.
So, he's bottled.
And the players are surrounding him as well. I was thinking, I won't make a decision.
You know why he's done it? Because he regrets giving him the booking because he knew that there was contact for the dive, in inverted commas.
That's not a penalty for me.
It's
a dive.
I agree.
Yeah,
but
it's not a penalty.
I agree, but with the hysteria surrounding it, if you look at, did you watch it, the game? Did you see it at halftime, the big fuss they were making all about it? They might as well have just said, you know, it's a penalty, even though it was a dive. Yeah. They might as well have just said it was a penalty.
Yeah, still, they've got the referee's got to play, but he's there.
I agree.
To abide by the rules, and the rule is, if you dive, it's a yellow card. If you handball it in that situation, that's a yellow card. They're the rules. That's what his job is, and he failed to do that.
So he bottled it then, as you said, he bottled it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's certain situations where I believe a referee should use common sense in football. That's not common sense. That's a booking. That's just simple as that. And
the rules or the laws.
And to not get, I like to know his reasons behind for not giving it. Forget him not giving it. I like him to come out and say, well, I didn't book him because of what? There's no, for me, there's no explanation he can give me for me to understand that he didn't book Sadio Mane. I don't get it.
So let's have, you know, this would be interesting because what happens next season when there's VAR?
Now, don't stop me with that VAR. Again,
what happens when there's VAR? Because he's, as you said, he's picked up the ball. There's, you don't even need VAR for that.
Yeah.
Well, you don't, do you?
Because if the referee makes a decision, can it still go to the VAR for them to review it? How does it work? Because obviously he saw it. He gave the free kick. So that's
something. I don't think they can delve into that when it's not a goal scoring opportunity. It's not like, I don't think they can. If the referee's decision, that's his decision. I think. In certain areas, you've just got to let the referee it. And then, you know, in goal scoring opportunities, then you can bring the VAR in. You can't do it in all around the pitch. It's got to be a goal scoring opportunity or, you know, an offside or...
I know the VAR is used in certain occasions. Is it like a goal scoring opportunity, mistaken identity, offside?
You said it was a goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah, so I guess it would have been reviewed.
Well, there you go. See? Case for VAR.
Nope.
Tough. Right, Crystal Palace's week got a little bit better when Southampton and Stoke suffered heavy defeats, cementing their spots in the relegation zone. Mate, Arnautovic, he's been West Ham's star man this season. We wondered if they'd be able to replace Dimitri Payet. Well, here he is. He got two goals in the 3-0 win against Southampton. He's been absolutely superb signing, hasn't he? Well done, Bilic.
Eventually. Remember the start to the season. Got sent off on his debut. He went all these games without a goal. The West Ham fans were... kind of lambasting his performances, that, you know, he's not tracking back, he's not doing this and that, and all of a sudden Moyes has come in and he's turned him into a player. Give Moyes credit. No, I'm only joking. He's always had that individuality about him, Arnautovic. He's the type of player that you don't think he's going to work for the team, but on his day could win your football match. You know, he's got that arrogance about him, that he thinks he's the best. And listen, he's a good player. He's a decent player for me. And he will probably be the reason why West Ham will stay up, because he's got goals in him and he's got that magic touch, so to speak, in the final third. And, you know, his goals again proved. I mean, he probably had what he wanted to get one over Mark Hughes again, didn't he? So probably raised his game even more.
Exactly.
But regardless, he got the points for West Ham. So. He's been a really good signing.
Absolutely. And Saj, your team, Arsenal, were quite flat until Lacazette came on, mate. A debatable penalty gave them a lead against Stoke, but after that, it was pretty much plain sailing, wasn't it? I mean, what did you make of the Aubameyang-Lacazette combination?
Yeah, they looked okay together. I think they need to play at least 10 games together to work out how to play with each other and, you know, what kind of runs they make in games and, you know, the two combined together for us to get a true reflection of how they fit together as a combination up front. But, you know, I was quite happy with kind of the start. I mean, because they keep on flittering in and out of the team, or one gets subbed and the other one comes on. But you need to play them a good 10 games together to see if they'll gel. Otherwise, you need to get rid of one. Probably Lacazette.
Really? Okay. You know, I think he's a better player, to be fair. Lacazette. That's just a bit of him. A bit suited for the Premier League. Right, gents. Shiren Hoddle slammed Aubameyang for allowing Lacazette to take the penalty. Instead of taking it himself, which actually would have made the... I think I would have given him a hat-trick, wouldn't it? Yeah. Big deal about nothing, isn't it? Is it a big deal? I mean, to be fair on the guy, I mean, I've been following obviously Arsenal fans on Twitter, and they're saying, you know, it was a great gesture, you know, to get Lacazette's confidence up, and I get it. I agree.
Ronaldo did it to Benzema 2 weeks ago for a penalty. Benzema went how many games without a goal for Real Madrid? Ronaldo was on a hat trick, and he allowed Benzema to take the penalty for Benzema to score.
Why not?
No big deal, because it's sportsmanship. It's allowing your teammate to gain a bit of confidence. I think fair play to Aubameyang. I personally wouldn't give him the penalty. Knowing me, I would have wanted to get a hat-trick. But I guess that's good team spirit. It's allowing his teammate or his mate to go on, mate, go and get yourself a goal, get yourself a bit of confidence. Because at the end of the day, it is a team game, isn't it?
Mm.
So if Lacazette gets confidence, Aubameyang's already got two, he's got confidence. It's only good for the team, isn't it?
Sadly, if you were on two goals and you're on a hat-trick, would you have given that ball to your teammate who hadn't scored for a few weeks?
It depends if I liked him or not. Yeah.
Oh, no. Come on.
No, I'm being serious. I mean, when I was at a club and we got a penalty, I didn't like the person who takes a penalty, so I picked up the ball to the penalty. Yeah.
What club was this, Saj?
Huh?
What club?
I probably would have. If it's a teammate who I knew was down and, you know, not scoring goals and needed to score, then I probably would give it to a forward. Definitely, yeah.
Would you still?
I would have done, yeah. If I'm on two goals, but listen, Aubameyang's going to get a hat trick anyway. Mm. Hasn't he got one already? Or I don't know.
Not for us.
But he'll get another one this season, or he'll get one next season. So I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, for him to give it to his teammate, I think it's a great thing to do. The guy is obviously low in confidence. Wenger's been dropping him left, right, and centre when he was fit. He's just come back from an injury. They've got a big game coming up in Europe, so obviously you want the guy's confidence to be sky high, and for him to have a goal, I think it's a great gesture. I think it's a good idea. And
but this is what I was saying, Stella, about the team spirit. Aubameyang is cup tied for the Europa, so I'm assuming Lacazette will start. Mm. So the fact that you've got that goal can give him that boost when he plays in that next game. So that's why for me it was a good gesture.
Or it's just putting extra pressure on him to say, right, you've got your goal now, you've got to carry on. Double edged sword there. Yeah. Double edged sword. Rod, would you do it?
Oh,
he's thinking about it. Yeah, actually.
No, would. It's, you know, the game's over. All I want to do is win a game and not care who scores. As long as we win, I don't really care.
Proper team player, Rod, isn't it?
True. All right. What about this?
It's good, like you say, though, it's good for team spirit, that. And, you know, not many strikers would do that anyway. Not many I know anyway. But, yeah, I wouldn't really care. As long as we win, I don't really care who scores.
United did it with Diego Forlan. His first goal against Maccabi Haifa. Maccabi Tel Aviv in the Champions League. I think Van Nistelrooy was our penalty taker at the time, and he gave it to Forlan.
5-2, that one.
Yeah.
5-2. Yeah.
And that was his first goal for United.
And Yakubu scored the hat-trick in the other game.
Or rather, yeah, that was in Cyprus.
Right. Rod, your mate Alan Pardew has left West Brom by mutual consent 4 months into the job. The former Palace, West Ham, Charlton, Newcastle and Reading manager guy did the baggies to an eye-watering one win in 18 games. Too little too late, though, isn't it? They're done.
Yeah, they're done. I just don't know where to start with this because, you know, it starts with the fans all the months back when the booing, when the mid-table and the booing, they want more.
Thank you.
And then, you know, obviously the board listen. They get rid of an absolute guaranteed stay in the league with Tony Pulis. To get rid of him and bring in Pardew, who was absolute nightmare, Crystal Palace, and he gets another job at West Brom, and he's just continued that. So good riddance, back to the Championship, and you know, it looks like they're in money trouble. Looks like they've got money problems as well. So you know, it's a tough league to get that out of that. So. They'll probably free for all, like the rest of them, that end up in money problems. But it's their own fault, you know. They had Tony Pulis there, and some of the players need to take responsibility as well, because you know there's some experienced players there that I'm sure if Tony Pulis at the club, they wouldn't have been nicking taxis in Spain. So,
There's
these are experienced players like Jake Livermore, Johnny Evans, and Gareth Barry. They're not kids. You know, if in an ideal world, you just sack them, but obviously they're in money problems and they can't do that, so you have to pay them off. So, you know, there's problems there at West Brom at the minute, and you know, it's all down to their own fault, to be honest.
I'm going to disagree. I think Pardew did a good job before he left. They don't Liverpool at the FA Cup.
Oh, well, come on. Cry out loud. This guy, you had to throw this one in. Listen, he won. This is a fact. He won as a manager just 2 out of his last 29 Premier League games. 2 out of 29 Premier League games. And yet, West Brom came in and they thought it would be a great idea to bring him in, right? Saj, I know that he's a Crystal Palace legend. I know it's only because of that bloody goal in the semi-final against Liverpool. But let's be 100% honest, right? You know, he had that terrible run at Newcastle and then he turned it around and then he got sacked. They gave him like a 9-year contract. Was it a 6-year contract?
Six-year, like that, right?
And then
got Charlton relegated.
He got Charlton relegated. He had an awful time at West Ham. Do you know what actually did it? What actually ruined or was the nail in the coffin? That dance in the FA Cup final. Yeah. That's what did it. When you see a manager doing that on the touchline, you know he's got problems, right? And as far as I'm concerned, with the greatest respect to Alan Pardew, I don't care. Good riddance, you know. But then again, it goes back to what Rod said about the West Brom fans. You know what? For all the stick I'm going to get on Twitter, I don't care. You get what you deserve, right? 4 or 5 months ago, you were booing the team. You were saying, oh, we're 12th in the table. We should be doing better. We're playing rubbish football. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. Tony Pulis is rubbish. He's second as far as he can go. Well, I'm sorry, but where did Alan Pardew take you? Well, where did that Spanish fella take him? What's his name?
Pepe Mel.
Pepe Mel. Where did he take them? He was high-fiving Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in a 4-4 draw. So for them to be in that position in the table, for people like Johnny Evans, as I said weeks ago, he had the Britney Spears meltdown. He just started nicking cabs, you know. I was just shaving his head. I find it absolutely hilarious. Saj, I mean, I don't know what you think about this. I know it's not nice seeing teams. Well, actually, no, it's nice seeing teams like that go down. Sorry, you carry on, mate.
I mean, they've got experienced players. There's something fundamentally wrong there. The team spirit or the manager. There's just something which is wrong at the club. As we said with Crystal Palace, when they lost 7 games in a row, they knew that it was the manager, so they got rid of him and brought in someone new. But it doesn't seem like West Brom have a backup plan. Whether Pardew doesn't think the players are good enough or whether he's speaking to them in a manner that they don't like, in a harsh manner. But if you're down there, that's the way you need to be spoken to. So I'm not too sure what's really gone wrong there. But they're finished. They're down. They're done. They're playing like a team that's relegated anyway.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. See, the thing is, when you've got a team with look, these are Tony Pulis players. Let's be 100% honest. They're workhorses. They do the basics good, and they can dig you out of the mire. But the problem is, you need that manager there to give them that motivation, to give them that arm around the shoulder and you know, really motivate them, as I said. And Pardew doesn't seem like that kind of manager. He just seems like one of these, I don't even know. Like, I can't even explain it. He's not tactically astute.
No.
You know, there's nothing that makes me think, yeah, you know, he could really motivate this team. Like, and I don't understand how managers like him keep getting jobs. Like, what?
It's the ongoing cycle that we have in British football where the same managers get the same jobs all the time. There's no new managers coming through. You get Steve Bruce's, Tony Pulis's, Pardew's, Harry Redknapp's, who's probably moving on now.
Mark Hughes.
And they just all circle the same kind of mid-level, mid-table, kind of top championship clubs. Table bottom of the Premiership, top of the league championship clubs. They all just do the cycle, don't they?
It's astounding. It really is astounding. And you know, we've seen other managers at lower league in the, you know, lower down in the table, like Mick McCarthy. Same happens with him. Neil Warnock. Same thing happens with him. And I just can't understand it. You know, and it goes back to what we've said weeks ago in terms of British coaches go abroad to America to coach in the USL, to coach in MLS, to coach in the A-League in Australia, or even in Philippines, Taiwan, wherever, because they don't get the opportunities out here, because the opportunities are given to the old boys club, you know. And the sooner we eradicate this, the sooner our teams might actually stand a better chance of doing well in European competitions, and perhaps the national team might actually improve a bit. You know, I mean, with the greatest respect to Gareth Southgate, he's in a is he actually in a win-win or a lose-lose situation at the moment? Because if England get knocked out of the World Cup, they'll be like, well, you know, well, we kind of expected it. But if they do well, then it'll be like, well, we should be doing well because we've got the best league in the world, in inverted commas. So
I think Southgate's done all right since he's had the job.
Yeah, no, I think Southgate's done all right. And he's done it the right route as well. Yeah. When he's gone with the under-21s. And they offered him the job previously, but he didn't take it when Allardyce took over. And he carried on with the 21s. So he knows all the players coming through and he knows the system that he wants to play and the fundamentals that he of each position of how he wants them to play in international football. So I think he's got a good foundation of how we could improve on our recent forms on in major cup competitions for England.
Mm. Steve Cottrell is another name that always gets thrown about. And what's
Sam Allardyce?
No, what's his name? Steve? What's his name?
Yeah, Steve Cottrell.
No, there's another guy, big guy, was Rotherham manager for a while. Where is he now?
Oh, Steve Palmer. Evans. Steve Palmer.
Is that his name?
Palmer.
Steve Evans.
He's at Peterborough.
There you go. See, another guy like just walks into jobs. Like, you know what? I bet Dean Saunders will get a job in the next 6 months. Honestly, like, his agent has got contacts, man. That's all I've got to say. Like, that's all.
Oh, yeah. It's all what agent you're with, and
Martin Allen's another one.
Martin Allen, yeah. He's
at Barnet.
Funny enough, I saw him last week driving into a car park next to where I work. I said hello to him.
he's at Barnet now, isn't he?
He's at Barnet again. Like,
yeah, he's back at Barnet, but they're going to go down.
Yeah.
They had another one. Who was the ex-Stevenage manager?
Ooh, nice.
Oh, the
flash
art. Yeah, the skinny fella.
Yeah, no one liked him in football. Everyone
despised him. Oh, he's going to bug me.
And I've had contact with him, and he's not very pleasant. Should we say?
He got sacked the other day, didn't he?
He got sacked and then they bought Martin Allen.
That's right.
And he'd only been there half a season.
It's mad. It really is mad. It really is.
Graham
mad.
Wesley.
There you go, Graham Wesley.
We're just going to be rolling off names of managers, obscure managers that shouldn't really be in jobs, but somehow
there's so many bad managers out there that unfortunately are ex-players that. They're just not up to the task. They have this merry-go-round when there's so many good young coaches out there. They see it as taking a chance where they're just going for a safe bet when this merry-go-round of managers that they just pick out of.
Hasselbank's another one. Hasselbank got sacked from Northampton the other day, didn't he?
Yep.
He was at QPR and then Burton.
Yeah, I mean he started off lower down. It's like before he started off on Macclesfield and then. Went to Blackburn.
Oh,
no, where did he go to?
MK Dons.
Blackburn, yeah. But, yeah. It's just... But I think that's the problem as well. Because everyone knows it's a merry-go-round, the same kind of managers. You pay a fortune to get your kind of licences, the UEFA licences. And then you might get a job, or you might not. Or you might get a job in the youth team. But very rarely you're going to get the top job at a club. But people think, is it really worth it?
It's like Tony Pulis. He's gone to Middlesbrough, doesn't know what to do with him. They're not in a relegation battle. I'm in the playoffs. Like, what do I do? Do I win? Do I lose? What do I do? I ain't got a clue.
Carl Robinson's another one, isn't he? Former MK Dons.
Yeah, he just moved to Oxford from Charlton.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because Charlton have got Lee Bowyer now. That's been quite interesting. They've won their last two games, I think. So, yeah. Well, maybe he might do something.
Lee Bowyer with no qualifications.
Yeah. Do you know who's a promising coach?
Oof, there you go. See, like Di Matteo. Go on.
Michael Appleton, who's at Leicester. I think he deserves a chance. I think he's got a good philosophy about him.
Mm. I think so. He did pretty well at Portsmouth, didn't he? He did pretty well at Oxford.
Yeah.
So yeah, but they're few and far between, really.
Mm.
They're few and far between. As I said before, a lot of coaches go abroad to apply their trade. Look at Mark. Mark's working for the Liverpool Academy in Texas and
doing really well.
You know, someone like Darren Powell, not the Darren Powell that we used to play, and Darren Powell. Who was at Nottingham Forest a while back as a player? We're talking years, but you know he's at San Antonio in USL. You know Mike Kelleher, who's at West Ham. He's director of football at Charleston Barry. So you know we've got good coaches. It's just that they're not being utilized properly. You know it's bizarre. It really is.
It's like Warren Joyce of United. He's in Australia now.
Yeah. But wasn't he at Wigan for a bit?
Didn't do well, did it?
Well, there you go. Anyway. Right, in other news, because I think we've dragged this on for a bit too long, Juve regained their four-point lead at the top, following a 3-1 win over Milan. Napoli's draw at Sassuolo raised further questions about their mental strength and title credentials. That's mostly from me, to be honest. Mate, to be fair, Juve were a little fortuitous. Milan had a couple of great chances after Bonucci levelled, but the game changed when Douglas Costa and the Cuadrado came on.
Pace.
Power, energy.
There you go. When you've got that in your team that you can hit kind of teams on the break or go at them, then, you know, you've always got a chance. Milan are made of decent stuff since Gattuso has taken over. He's brought that resilience back at them as well, which is good. So, and it's always a big game, Juventus Milan as well. So and it was a big game for Juve, especially after Napoli dropped points at Sassuolo. It was a disappointing result, 1-1 away. But they've dropped a few points, Napoli, lately. And we know what's going to happen. You know, Juve are going to win the league. It's inevitable now.
It's like you said tonight. You know, Juve got getting hammered. This bad news for Napoli because they're just going to steamroll Serie A now. They've got nothing else to play for.
Well, they've got the Coppa Italia to play. They've got Milan in the Coppa Italia, don't they?
Yeah, they'll win that one.
They'll probably win that as well.
Right. This is the interesting one that I wanted to sink my teeth into. I mean, Roger and I spoke about it on our United show the other day, Viva Red Army. You can follow us on Twitter at Red Army Viva. Yeah. Great plug there. Now, over in MLS, the first ever El Trafico. I love that name. It's brilliant. El Trafico, also known as the Hollywood Derby, literally had a Hollywood ending. LA Football Club, a new franchise managed by Bob Bradley. You remember him? He was at Swansea for a bit. Went 3-0 up with two goals coming from Carlos Vela. Galaxy clawed it back to 3-2 with 20 minutes to go before Zlatan Ibrahimovic took centre stage. And we knew he was going to play a part in this game. He always scores in his debut, so he scored twice. A 35-yard half volley put the Galaxy level before an injury time header completed an unlikely comeback. Now, Saj, true to form, Zlatan told the press, "I heard the crowd saying we want Zlatan, so I gave them Zlatan." That was Galaxy's second win of the season, mate. There's actually a lot more to come from Ibra, isn't there? He's absolutely phenomenal. He really is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's got a great presence about him. It's funny, actually, because I do keep an eye on Galaxy. My wife used to work for the company that owned the Galaxy.
Okay.
But, I mean, Zlatan's amazing. I think he's got such a big presence about him. He's a great player. You know, commands respect. And I saw the two goals. I mean, the first goal was amazing. The second goal was actually offside. But, I mean, to come on for 19 minutes and score two goals and win the derby made himself a legend already, hasn't he?
That's right. Now, the thing is, the last superstar Galaxy had was David Beckham. They haven't really had a big name since then. If you want to talk about Landon Donovan making a return, whatever.
Ashley Cole.
Steven Gerrard,
Robbie Keane.
Ashley Cole's still there, captain.
What, bigger than Beckham? Bigger than
Nigel de Jong?
Well,
Beckham was the biggest one.
Beckham was the one that put He put them on the map, didn't he?
Yeah.
Although it wasn't Kobe Jones there for a while back in the day. So
going back.
But yeah, so he's obviously going to be the main man out there. It's quite interesting because you've got David V out there. You've got Giovinco out there. Giovanni, I don't know if he's still at LA Galaxy? Giovanni? For the Mexican?
Dos Santos.
Yeah. He's still there? There you go, he's still there. You got a few other players. So it's going to be very intriguing.
Schweinsteiger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I forgot about him. But his missus had a kid, so he'll probably be going back and forth, watching her to play tennis or teaching the kid how to play tennis, I don't know, or whatever. But yeah, it's going to be an intriguing season. They started a few weeks ago. And if Galaxy can keep clean sheets, because obviously conceding three goals in the game isn't great. If they keep clean sheets, he's going to get them goals. So I wouldn't rule them out. You know, so.
They're not a good side, the Galaxy.
Well.
They haven't been for a number of years now.
But maybe he's the boost that they need.
Possibly, but
we saw Schweinsteiger come into Chicago, and the past.
I watched the MLS. There are a lot of teams that are better than the Galaxy.
Well, yeah, I agree. But if you look at, say, Chicago Fire, who the previous two seasons before Schweinsteiger's arrival, they were the worst team, and he came in, galvanized them, gave them that boost.
I think in that league, when you've got someone like Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming to that league, he'll win you games and score goals in that league because the depth of from the Premier League to the MLS is so big. It's just, there's so much quality in the Premier League, and there's, you know, it's not brilliant in the MLS. Yeah, there's good players in there, but most of them are coming to the end of their career, and most of them are second rate South American players, or American players. So, you know, they're like we talked about the other day, it's the first division or championship players at best. And, you know, Ibrahimovic is still a world class international player.
Rod, did you read about Zlatan, the explanation of his first goal? What he said?
No, go on.
He said he was too tired to run, so he thought he'd shoot.
To be honest, when I seen him play, when he played that first half against Burnley at Christmas, because that was the game I went to, I looked at him and I thought, that injury has done him. He's finished. Because he looked a million miles away, and obviously dragged him off at half-time. But, you know, he's obviously as fit as a fiddle. You know, he's had one bad 45 minutes. And, you know, like I say, that MLS, it's made for him there, especially LA Galaxy. And he'll win games and score goals. I don't know about win the league or win the major trophy, but, you know, it'll definitely do well for him.
Do you know, I've got to say, I don't know what the goalkeeper was doing. I mean, he's 35 yards out. I mean, 35 yards for Ibrahimovic on a half volley is nothing. I'm looking at the goalkeeper thinking, what on earth are you doing there, mate? Like, you know what he's capable of doing. Like, stay on your line. At least on your 6-yard box. Anyway, Bayern Munich, like Man City, are one win away from sealing the Bundesliga title after absolutely annihilating Dortmund 6-0. Now, I can't really say too much about Borussia Dortmund because I have some followers that like Dortmund and some people on LinkedIn who are at Dortmund. And I'm
going to show some respect.
I'm going to show a little bit of respect, but I can't help but find this absolutely hilarious. Lewandowski grabbed a hat-trick against his old club, who showed the golfing class between the sides. Now, Rod, Bayern were 5-0 up at half-time. It was pretty shambolic from Dortmund, wasn't it? Embarrassing defensive display.
Yeah, it was. Well, you know, Bayern Munich, obviously, the tails were up, but yeah, it was poor defending. You know, yeah, I heard some comments were saying that a third division side shouldn't be... A third in the league shouldn't be getting beat like that. If someone who's top, you know, sometimes that happens. I remember United beating Arsenal 8-2. I remember City beating us 6-1. You know, it happens, but, you know, it's still poor. And I'm sure the Dortmund fans weren't happy because, you know, they cut them to ribbons in the end, and it could have been 8-9.
I've got no sympathy for Dortmund, in a sense. Well, so if you sell your best players to your rivals all the time, what do you expect? I do it all the time. Lewandowski, Hummels, Götze. What do you expect?
But they're not just selling them to their rivals. They're selling them to anyone now. They're selling Bayern. They're selling...
Yeah, but if they're going to compete Bayern for the title, you're giving them their best players. How are you going to compete?
Oh, yeah, I know. You don't have to tell me that.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I've got no sympathy for them whatsoever.
Okay, so if we go by the league table, as Rod said, Dortmund are the third best team in the Bundesliga. What does this result actually tell you about the rest of the teams?
Bit like the English league, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bayern are up there, Sitter out there, and the rest are just all playing catch up. I think the Bundesliga for me this year has been the poorest it's been for a number of years.
Of course, Batshuayi scoring goals there, doesn't it?
That's your friend, isn't it, Batshuayi?
I think it's never going to change, is it? Over the years, you know, there's always one or two that pops up, but then they go away. It's always in the major countries, it's going to be the same teams and there and thereabouts. And that's never, ever going to change because of the massive of money and the massive support that these clubs can generate. You know, you're going to get a Leicester every 10 or 20 years or every, you know, lifetime. Never.
Well, you had Wolfsburg in cases. Germany.
Pardon?
You had Wolfsburg in Germany. They did the Leicester kind of.
Yeah, Wolfsburg. But where are they now? Then they go away. You know, you have the Juventus obviously staying at PSG. You had the Monaco and now they'll go away because they've sold all the players. So... Yes. You know, it's unfortunately it's always going to be the same teams and just one team like Villarreal years ago. They were always up there, and then Valencia. Now they've gone away. It runs in cycles. But you're always going to have the top teams, i.e., Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Manchester United, PSG, top of the league. Unfortunately,
the only thing with Bayern is Jupp Heynckes is their manager. He's 72 years old. He can't go on forever. The next man that comes in, he's got to do a job. He's got to be the man. I'm looking at who's available in the summer, for example. I don't know anyone that is really out there that you know is a free agent apart from
Alan Pardew.
Crikey. Yeah.
He plays attractive football. Buy him on that kind of style of football, innit?
Also, he dances, doesn't he? Like, yeah. So I'm thinking maybe in the summer, if Heinkes goes, who can they bring in? I mean, is Jurgen Klopp going to be available if they don't win the World Cup Germany? Is he going to go? Can they bring him in? Jurgen Klopp, perhaps? There's always been rumours about him going to Bayern eventually.
Zidane? If he leaves Real Madrid?
Possibly. Klinsmann, where's he? Klinsmann.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go with him, to be honest. I don't think they'll go with him. So, yeah, there's... Listen, we can say that about it. Pochettino. Can you imagine?
Arsene Wenger.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Arsenal fans, oh, I can hear them getting happy.
Yeah, imploding. Yeah, so it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see who Bayern Munich are going to bring in, how they're going to cope. Like I said, Heinkes won't be there forever. I don't think he's going to be at the end of the season.
No.
Or he's going to leave in the season. So.
He's done a phenomenal job, though.
Well, yeah, of course. What, they were 9 points behind when he took over? Yep. He's got them like 15 points, 20 points ahead, something like that.
If they come in for Klopp, what would you, do you think he'd go or do you think he'd stay? You think Bayern Munich a bigger team than Liverpool?
He's got a more realistic chance of winning the league.
It's a tough one because
I think he'll go.
Do you know what? It's a tough one because as much as it pains me to say this, Liverpool players and managers, when they go there, they become really emotionally invested in the club and the fans and everything, and they feel like they owe the fans something. And I don't think Klopp is the kind of person to jump ship unless the shit hits the fan, like what he did with Dortmund. So unless Liverpool have got again a really bad run of form and then Bayern Munich come in and he'll say, yeah, I'll take it, he'll stay at Liverpool. I can't see him leaving. This is why I'm saying I think Pochettino will be the one that they're going to go for.
I think Real Madrid will go for him.
I think he'd be crazy to leave Tottenham for Bayern Munich. If Real Madrid come calling, then you could see him going there. But to go to Bayern Munich from Tottenham, because Tottenham have got an exciting team at the minute. You know, they're only one or two players to really have been a force in the Premier League. So,
but you said it yourself that they've got United, City and Liverpool to contend with.
Yeah, I know, but you know, they're still exciting. If I was a Tottenham fan or I was a coach, you know, there's something happening there. And you only need one or two other players, and you know that they could be where City are now.
What about
they could be that good.
Too negative for them. Too negative. Who do you think will take over Bayern Munich in the summer, Sag?
Not got a clue, because I'm not really
say Pochettino.
Sure, German. I think they'll keep it German or in house, to be honest.
Yeah.
So yeah. Because they've not really got a tradition of getting kind of foreign managers, so I think they might keep it in-house.
Mm, they have Guardiola there. Jupp Heynckes is Belgian, I think.
It's pretty nailed on that Jogi Löw is going to get it, isn't it? No?
Okay.
Well, they were talking about Tuchel, didn't they? But they said that Tuchel's agreed.
File him under Sarri, yeah. Another manager that, you know, merry-go-round manager where you just, for what? Why would you bring him in? Why? Because his team passes the ball backwards and has a goalkeeper that can play the ball 40 yards. Jesus Christ, this is what I'm talking about, these managers, man. Like, sorry, won nothing in his career. The only thing he's good for is smoking a cigarette on the touch. They can't even do that anymore. Don't get me started, man. But, anyway.
Yeah, no, because they were saying that he's agreed terms with another club, isn't he?
Probably Leverkusen, another club with a... Who was the manager before that they sacked that Leverkusen?
Schmidt.
Yeah, Schmidt, another guy that they were saying, oh, yeah, he's going to be the next best thing. What happened?
He's in China now.
Rob, yeah, there you go.
I think he was in China, yeah.
There you go. Oh, AVB. Let's get Andre Villas-Boas, another manager that
loves... Jose Mourinho at Bayern.
They won't take him.
Too negative?
No.
I think it's the only profession where you just have an absolute stinker in your job and then get... be paid by someone else to get a new job. I think it's the only profession that it's just the weird how this merry-go-round keeps going on. Like Paul Clement, where's he just got a job?
Has he?
Paul Clement, is that Reading?
Is he?
Yeah, Reading. He's just got a Reading job. No, he just had a stinker at Swansea and then it ends up getting a, you know, all right, it's not a Premier League side, but it's still a well-paid job at Reading, it'll be on. And he's just had a stinker at Swansea, so it's just... You know, it's frustrating for them, you know, these young coaches, all these people that are coming up and doing well in the lower leagues, and they don't even get a look in.
I'm not trying to be funny, but if Paul Clement hadn't been Ancelotti's runner at Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, he wouldn't be getting these jobs.
He failed that derby as well, didn't he?
It's a fact. Because he's because of that. That's all it is.
He's basically a school teacher, isn't he?
Yeah. Exactly. See, we've just destroyed everyone, haven't we? But you're glad you came on this episode, Saj.
That's a neighbourhood in football for life.
Well, we've got a special guest on the show next week. And then Barge.
I was about to say something, but I actually can't say that because we'll get sued.
I'll give you a story. Did you know what Marinakis did at Olympiacos?
Come on, tell me what our friend Marinakis did at Olympiacos.
He sent all the players on holiday to the end of the season. Doesn't want to know them. He's fined them €475,000.
Aren't they top of the league?
No, they're third. They drew 1-1 with Olympiacos, who are a poor team, by the way, people that don't know in Greece.
Were they the equivalent of what, Southampton or
Stoke at the moment? And he's had enough. He sent them all on holiday apart from 2-3 players. He doesn't want to know them. He's going to sell them all in the summer, and he's promoting the under-20s to play until the end of the season. There you go.
But weren't they like 15 points clear at some point this season? Something ridiculous.
No, not this season. Because Balk and Ike have been up there. Ike are top of the league. Balk are second. Olympiacos
are third. AK Athens are top of the league. Yes. The side that were in the second division 2 years ago. Three years ago.
Yes.
Wow, how the mighty have fallen.
There's my story for today.
But Marinakis owns Nottingham Forest now.
Yes.
And isn't he going to go to court for drug trafficking, which we already knew about.
We've known that for years.
Yeah, the Balk fans have been having signs at their stadium saying, Marinakis, you're a heroin dealer for years. And only now the Greek government are going, oh,
they might be right.
You sell the drugs? What is this?
And the back chairman with the gun, where he walked into, he got 3 years, didn't he? 3 years banned from the stadium.
He got a 3 year stadium ban out of his own stadium, and the police are going, it's okay, that's enough of a punishment. Jesus Christ.
Only in Greece.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. See, I didn't have a happy ending to this show, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Oh, lovely. I'm glad I can help.
Great stuff. Right, that's us done for this week. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defences. One is at Yannickus J. Saj, thank you for coming on the show, man. Really appreciate your time. Do you want to give our listeners your Twitter handle so they can interact with you, my friend?
Yeah, no, it's great coming back on. And if you do want to know any more about Palace, tweet Clinton Morrison. I'm sure he'll tell you everything.
Do you know what? I met Clinton Morrison about 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, what a nice lad.
He's still the same now.
Yeah, he was a nice lad.
You're still the same when you're 16 as he is now.
Oh, mate, I'd love to get him on, but I think he's tied to Sky, isn't he? They wouldn't let him come.
Why not?
I don't know. If he's tied to Sky, then I'm sure that they'll...
Saj could put in a good word, don't
he? You reckon?
No, you have these players that are freelance, because I've seen him on different channels to Clinton Morrison. I'm sure I've seen him on Channel 5 as well.
Okay.
Yeah, he does Channel 5 as well.
He does, yeah.
Tweet Clinton Morrison, ask him to come on.
I will. See,
definitely come on.
Do you speak to him, Saj?
Yeah, sometimes. He just drives me mad, so I need
him. We'll get you both on. We'll talk about Palace days.
Is that when he said he was better than Michael Owen, do you remember?
I don't.
I think Palace were going to play Liverpool in the semi-final of the League Cup, and they...
Oh, yeah,
Do you remember that, Saj?
You see, this is the thing, you got to admire people like that, because you know what, he was proper Larry, but he was entertaining as well.
You know what, he's always been the same. 40 quid a week or whatever, he's always been the same, so I respect him for that.
Superb.
Good on him.
Rod, I've got the giggles now. Rod, what's your Twitter handle, mate?
Rod James Giggs. @RodJamesGiggs.
Yeah, I tweeted that pie company again, and they didn't. They don't want to sponsor you. Yeah, they don't want to sponsor you. But there is a Cypriot kebab shop around the corner. We tweeted them, so hopefully maybe they can deliver us. Can you imagine them delivering like three, 4 hours up the road?
Nah, you've slated Mkhitaryan too much, so they won't do it.
Yeah, but Mkhitaryan. Anyway, let's leave it at that one, because they're Arsenal fans. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Well, that's us done for this week. It's been a very, very eventful show. I hope you guys still listening on the download enjoyed it. If you're watching on YouTube, please like, please subscribe, please share. Just tell us about our shenanigans, because we've got more of these to come. The gloves are off on Shoot the Defence now. We're done. Adios.